Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, and joining us, as usual, is the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Awesome. Awesome day, Scott. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Or helping me, or being there with me, or showing up week after week, month after month, for over 3 years now.
Yeah, we're coming up. We're not that far away from our 300th episode, which is just absolutely mind-boggling. We're at 275 today, so we have to plan something special for number 300.
Okay, you'll get a raise.
All right.
I think I'm going to send you on a holiday to a tropical island.
Oh, wow, that would be wonderful. I had an interesting experience a couple weeks ago. I was at an event. It was a workshop put on by a friend of mine, and I was like what's called the staff. Like, I had the mic, I would run and give it to people, and basically my job was to keep everything not under control, but, you know, look after everything so everybody could just focus on whatever they needed to focus on. And because of the structure of, you know, long days, we would, you know, I'd be there probably about 8 o'clock in the morning, wouldn't leave till midnight. And of course, most of the time something was going on. So it wasn't like I could just, you know, have a snack when I wanted, or, you know, run out and go to the beach or any of those things. So it was a very, very structured weekend. And around midday, there would be a lunch break. It'd be about an hour and a half. And of course, my friend who was running the event and I would, and his wife would go for lunch, because it would just give us time to kind of decompress and be on our own. And the first day, he had lamb and I had something else. And I thought, wow, that lamb really looks good. So the next day for lunch, I had lamb. And about an hour later, he was doing some sort of exercise, and everybody was, you know, focused on doing this exercise, and they were all kind of on their own, so I wasn't really needed. And thank goodness for that, because I'm sitting on my chair at the back, my arms are crossed, and I had a 40-minute nap. And we're just not talking an ordinary nap. We're talking I am out cold. My friend came over 3 times, you know, blew in my ear. I didn't feel a thing. I didn't move, nothing, right? The odd time my head would pop forward and then pop back, but I was like, right. And if you'd asked me, I would have said, oh, you know, I don't know, 5 minutes, maybe 8 minutes.
Yeah, I just closed my eyes to rest.
40 minutes later, he's, you know, they're all kind of making more noise because they're finishing up, and he's saying, okay, everybody, we're done. And that woke me up. I don't know how long I would have stayed in that state.
Right. So this happened about what time of day?
It would be about 3 o'clock.
Okay, so here's something interesting, a tidbit. It's called the acid-alkaline tide, ebb and flow of the pH balance in the human body. We are the most acidic at about 2 a.m., middle of the night, and most alkaline about 2 p.m., about middle of the afternoon.
Wow.
And here are the associated emotions and body reactions. If you're acidic, you're anxious, agitated, short-tempered, OCD, as in obsessive-compulsive, easy to anger, impatient. If you are overly alkaline, you're apathetic, depressed, tired, sleepy, shutting down. In other words, you're engaging the rest and digest and repair side of the autonomic nervous system. It's not the fight or flight. It's the opposite, the rest and digest.
Okay.
So can you see how when you have kicked in that fairly alkaline time of day, and if you eat a meal that specifically to your physiology is highly alkalizing.
So just, what you're saying is, to me it might be alkalizing, and to you it might be acidifying.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's an important thing. So if you're either sympathetic or fast oxidizer, you're starting your day as overly acidic. If you're parasympathetic or slow oxidizer, you're starting your day as overly alkaline. If you are a parasympathetic and you eat a meal that's a whole bunch of protein, high protein, it will acidify you back into the normal. But if you're a slow oxidizer, it will actually push you further out into more alkalinity. So just from this, what you told me, I'm going to speculate that when you do your metabolic typing test, it's going to come out as fast oxidizer. And I'm really curious about that.
Right.
At this point you have not done it yet, right?
No, that's right. It's so let's find out. On. Yeah.
Huh. So what more is there to be said? Oh yeah, for instance, somebody like a sympathetic who starts the day as overly acidic needs to alkalize himself with carbohydrates like fruits and porridge and toast and that sort of thing. And that will sort of take away the edge and stop being miserable and mad and all of that. But if that same person goes and has a breakfast that's steak and sausage and eggs, that's acidifying to him. And so he's going to be actually even more miserable and more short-tempered and more easy to anger.
Okay, so what I'm kind of hearing from you is, let's say someone, when they have the fruit and stuff, that's alkalizing to them, and they become more relaxed, more relaxed, more relaxed, and you can be too relaxed, and then you can't get anything done. Like
yes.
What happened to me, I just actually went to sleep.
Yes.
And so that person may say, you know what, I want to have bacon and eggs today because I really feel like I need a jump start, as opposed to I'm not agitated or irritated or anything, but I need a jump start here, so that's the way I can jump start myself. And yet if I'm the acidic type and I know that I'm like a bit too hyper and maybe actually I'm a little bit irritable, I know, okay, well today's not a good day to have the eggs, but I should probably have this fruit and other stuff which will alkalize me a bit, and then I won't be quite so miserable.
Right. Now all of this were true only if your dominant style is sympathetic.
Right. It works the opposite way if you're the other style.
Yeah, that's right. If you're a parasympathetic, that will make you even more miserable.
Right.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So here we are. We're demonstrating. This was a phenomenal demonstration for you as to how these ebb and flow of the acidity and alkalinity work in the body day to day, and how food affects it immediately and directly. So we're finding that food itself is a powerful mind modulator. So I'll take a leap here. I saw a program on the television, a pharmacist was talking, and he was saying, you know, about 75% of all the drugs that we sell in this store deal with anxiety issues and depression issues. So this is the interesting thing. If you're overly acidic, you're having issues of anxiety. So you're fearful, you have stage fright and stuff like that. Or, you know, that social anxiety pills that they have or stuff like that. On the other hand, if you're depressed, you're overly alkalized all the time. And the only thing that you really need to do, instead of taking a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, is to change your diet. Switch it around. Eat the foods that will take you out of your overly alkalized state back into a little more balanced.
The problem, of course, is that nobody knows which one they are and which one will help and which one won't.
That's true. That is the big challenge. How do I convince people that it's worth the $97 that we charge to take the test?
To figure out your metabolic type.
Yep. Once you know, there's right. there's no mystery anymore.
And then what you can do is you can make changes based on your knowledge, as opposed to, because one of the things we've talked about oftentimes is there are all these diets like the Atkin diet and the Paleolithic diet and the ABC diet and the XYZ diet.
Yeah,
and
the two main models are the Dean Ornish, which is the low-fat vegetarian vegan. Gerson is in that group as well, which is fantastic for the what I would call the group one, which is the carbo low-fat people. And then the other group is the Atkins diet and South Beach and Jorge Cruz and other people who are saying the only way you can be slim and enjoy life is by eating almost all protein and very, very low carb. And that works for the people I'd label group two.
Right.
So if we know that there are essentially three groups, one, two, and the three is sort of middle that straddles both, but it doesn't mean that you can eat one or the other. It actually means that you need to eat one and the other.
Hmm.
It's sort of like visualize a seesaw, visualize two kids. If they are about the same weight, they're kind of balanced. They can play seesaw quite nicely.
Yep.
But if one of them is double the weight of the other one, there's no play, there's no game. The only way you can deal with it is to move that heavier kid up on the seesaw so it doesn't have as much leverage.
That's right. Or you add another kid. So we often see on the seesaw two kids on one side, one kid on the other side.
Right. So if, for instance, you happen to be group one, you need to have two kids that are carbo and one kid that is fats and proteins. You know, so on your plate, that would mean that you need to have way more of either carbohydrates or fats and proteins to get your seesaw in balance. If you're in the group three, which is the middle, you need to actually have like one guy playing seesaw with himself, straddling the seesaw and having to have something of both in order to be able to balance it. So you can't just go out and eat all steak or big lobster dinner with nothing. That would just push you way out into one side. You need to always balance it off with the other.
Right, right. And so that's really what we've always been talking about, is balancing. The problem is what balances someone will unbalance someone else. So you have people that take one diet and they're just like have phenomenal results, and then somebody else dies from taking that diet.
Speaking of which, I had a client call about a year ago. We promoted this Raw for 30. A Raw in 30. It was a diabetes solution, right? Like you get yourself on a raw diet and you eat cucumbers and salads and parsley, and essentially you go raw, vegan, no protein at all. Well, this gal called me on day 12 of this experiment. She said by day 3 she was starting to feel jittery and nervous and unwell. On day 7, she started with a breakout of lupus. On day 10, she just thought, well, I'm just cleansing. I'll just persevere. I mean, these people know what they're doing. They put it on a DVD. I'm sure they're right. Well, anyway, she was like in significant trouble. You know, her immune system just in total war with itself, just terrible. So I'm saying, why did you not call me sooner?
Right.
And, you know, she's a well-meaning person who's just simply not understanding that there is a biological individuality, that if you do it the right way, it'll work for you. If you're doing – oh, no, I said it wrong. It depends on what type you are that it will or will not work for you.
Right.
Anyway, it was a grand example of it not working for you. So I said to her, go buy yourself a salmon and eat it over the next 3 days.
And, you bring up another really valid point And we seem to really, as I mean, in general, I'm talking very generally here, we seem to want to give up our power. But what I mean by that is
responsibility, here, maybe?
Yeah, like if you do something and, like, let's just take a wild example. Let's take battery acid. And for some reason, somebody says, I have proof positive that if you put a drop of battery acid on your arm every day for a month, at the end of the month, you know, you'll have lost 30 pounds. Okay? So you put the battery acid on your arm and it burns. And then, like, after 12 days, you say, you know what? I got a big hole in my arm. It's like, hello, you know,
yep.
It's like, why did you listen to that person, right? And I mean, yep. It's a stupid example because who would do that? Like, but we do that because you reminded me of the Jamaican lady that you talked to, I don't know, 6 months ago, who was huge, but she was eating this diet that her doctor told her would really help her, and she was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you said, what did your grandma eat? Oh, this and this and this. Well, why don't you eat that? Well, because they told me I should eat this. Yeah, but what is your result? Oh, I've put on 50 pounds in the last 6 months. Well, stop doing that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm acidic or I'm alkaline. But what I do know is that when I have lamb at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, an hour later, I fall into the deepest possible sleep ever. Huh.
Right.
That's okay. A clue.
We have a great example of, at this time of day, if I really want to put myself out, I'll eat a solid piece of meat.
Yeah.
But here's the good thing. This reminded me of Tony Robbins. At one of his seminars, he said, always observe the results you get and then adjust.
Yes.
Right? I don't know. You must remember this, right? There's this, maybe you can say it better than I can, but that the point was that that you always seek the feedback from the system. Like, you want to find out how your input is interacting with the system, and you adjust what you're doing to get what you want.
Yeah.
So it's always try something. And then adjust.
That's, yeah, and rather than keep doing it to the point where you're deathly ill, or you've listen to your body, right? Like,
right. So of course we have this issue. Of course, speaking of Tony Robbins and psychology and neurolinguistic programming, one of the things that really plays hard is the meta programs that we all have. Some of us are internally referencing, others are externally referencing. The internally referencing people will check with themselves to decide what they want to do or what's right. Externally referencing people would be the ones that say, well, what do you think? Or do I look good in this? Or what should I wear? Or, the what do you think?
Right.
Whereas an internally referencing person looks in the mirror, turns around, says, yep, this is good. Doesn't even need to ask you, do I look okay tonight, honey?
Right.
And so that's your classic demo. So an internally referencing person eats something, feels bad, and says, oh, this is not good. I'm not doing this again. An externally referencing person calls her doctor and says, I ate such and such because you told me, and it didn't produce the expected result. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Right. I find there, as you were talking, I can think of examples where I've done both. And it's kind of interesting because the latest one was, as you know, I like hot yoga. And I've had some kind of emotional, I've had some
release.
Emotional upsets in the last couple of weeks, right?
Okay,
so
okay.
I'm doing my hot yoga, and my lower back on one side near the hip, it feels like I pulled a muscle, or I don't know if pulling a muscle is right. There's pain there. That's all I'm going to say, okay? So the Louise Hayes is, okay, back is support, hip is this, so you've got an issue with support and abandonment and blah, 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 which, you know, could all be totally true, right? And
yes.
But then the other part of me says, you did something in hot yoga and it's caused you pain. So don't go back until it's healed, right?
Yes,
you know, because there was a part of me was like, no, I want to go 3 times a week, right? And I haven't gone now for a week because I've had this pain, and and I'll move and I'll stretch and I'll do all the, very gingerly, very gently. And I could have gone to hot yoga and done it there, but I thought, you know what? I will probably push it more than I should. And I'm not sure how far is a safe push for this. And because I'm over 50 and I want to be around for another 50 years and being able to actively walk around and everything else, I'm going to listen to my body and not bother going. And the reason it kind of brought it up was because I'm thinking, today is the first day since it happened that I actually don't have any pain in my lower back hip area that I have. And I'm just kind of pushing at it the way I used to, where it would be excruciating pain right now. And I'm going, wow, like that's all, that's good. I can go back.
Feels like it's fixed, yeah?
Feels like it's fixed, right? And I don't know what will happen when I go to hot yoga. I might pull it again or I might redo it. I have no idea. But it seems to me that, my association with you has really helped because you've said things over the years where it's like, well, pay attention. And I noticed that I am paying more attention to my body. And then I'm saying, okay, is this really going to be helpful to my body or could it be potentially damaging to my body to continue doing it, right? And there are times when I will ask you, and there are times when I will ask my girlfriend, and there's times when I will ask my kids, and I'll ask my parents, and there are times when I'm just going, because I didn't ask anybody about my back, right?
Yes.
I just thought, you know what? There's something here. I push on it. It really hurts. When I move a certain way, it really hurts. I'm not going to go to hot yoga because it seems to me that's when it happened. I don't know for a fact that's when it happened, but I'm thinking that's probably when it happened, so I just believed myself. And now it's like, it's gone. So I really think, and the reason I'm going on about this is it's really important that we work at becoming more and more aware of our body, because I think, I know in my case, pretty oblivious for many, many years, right? And this whole thing about eating the lamb and having, I mean, we're not talking about a little sort of nodding off. We're talking about delta, theta, whatever, sleep level, like super, super deep, which I don't know that I even
have. In normal language, way out.
Way out. You know, I'm past Pluto, right?
Okay. So it's wonderful. I mean, here are these examples of real life, how we see it, what happens to us, and what triggers us, and what takes us into territory. I have some memories of eating certain foods and then driving way more aggressively than I should have. And when I look back, what preceded it from my food side, it was I took stimulants. I took, I don't know, either hot chocolate or coffee or ate some dessert or whatever.
Right.
So in my personality, when I take myself that far, that's what it'll do.
Yeah. So the question to everybody listening is, think about things that have happened, both, maybe, I wish I hadn't done that, or why did I say that? And then associate it with, or think back, well, what was I eating before? Oh, I had a cup of coffee. And well, now am I like that normally when I have a cup of coffee? Maybe check in with some of your friends. Like, do you notice when we go for coffee afterwards, I'm kind of like snarky? Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, there's a clue.
There's a clue, because, we don't always see ourselves the way, I don't think we ever see ourselves the way people around us see ourselves, right? And, it's always amazing when you ask somebody about how do they perceive you with the answers that you get, because it's never the same as what you think you're going to get.
Right.
not really possible, I think. But.
Yeah, don't ask if you don't want to know.
That's right. And okay, so let's go off on a slight. There's one more story I want to share about this, which happened years ago. I took a course on structure function, which basically means the structure of your. And they focus on the face. The structure of your face, like, do you have a straight up and down forehead? Is your nose wider, flatter? Are your eyes closer, narrow? Closer, or further apart? Comparatively speaking, to other people. right? These all mean things. And in fact, before Freud, this was the main way people did psychology and stuff. And it was basically the structure of your face meant this was the way you probably would act in certain situations, okay? So you could really, if you know this stuff, you can really read people very well. And there's only a couple things that I know and I always watch, and it just strikes me as very accurate. And so something happened, and I was talking to the instructor about it. And I think I was just telling a story about, you know, this happened, that happened, and this is the way I reacted, and I just can't believe I acted that way. And she blew my mind because she says, of course you would act that way, Scott. Because, and then she rattled off, you know, my eye width, my type, and all the blah, 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 blah. You know, your forehead is like this. Your ears are like that. Your lips are like this. That's the way you're going to react.
You're predetermined. You have no volitional choice. You're done.
Yeah. And it's not that you will act that way. It's just that's your kind of your default way of dealing with things.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because then if you know that when this happens, my default is that, you're more able to make a new choice. It's not that you have to do that. That's what you will be defaulting to if you're not paying attention. Right.
So are you done there, or is there more?
That's kind of my story.
Here's an interesting one that goes with that. There is a part of the human description which deals with the dominant gland. We have four types: adrenal, thyroid, pituitary, or gonads, sexual organs. And depending on which of these glands is the dominant one, your body develops in a specific way, and your dietary needs are specific, and you will have certain cravings, and you will, like, for instance, if you're overweight, you will need to eat in a particular way to get that under control. Otherwise, you won't. It's really funny. There's a fellow who wrote a book about it. His name is Elliot Abravanel. That's a French man. He was a doctor to Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And anyway, that's not really relevant. He wrote a book called Body Typing Diet. And based on his research, other people ran off with that. And it's funny. Like, the typical adrenal dominant person will look like a linebacker, built like a tank, you know, huge shoulders, strong legs. If he puts on weight, he's going to be massive everywhere, especially in the shoulders and back. The thyroid dominant will look a lot like a quarterback. It will be tall, slender. The limbs will be thin. The legs will be skinny. Arms will be skinny. And if that person puts on weight, it will be like he swallowed a watermelon.
We've seen those people, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. You know, skinny arms, skinny legs, big belly.
Yep.
The pituitary dominant is a person that looks sort of like a classic nerd, you know, larger head, non-athletic, fat distribution all over the body. And the gonadal, that really is mainly available in women. And that's where the lady has the, from waist up, she's one size, and from waist down, she's a one or two sizes bigger. Sort of like Jennifer Lopez or Hillary Clinton. Those would be the two most visible examples of that.
Right. Interesting.
And so, for instance, in those types, the food that stimulates that kind of gland are spicy foods, like Mexican, Thai, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so when you want to slim down, you need to consciously pull back on the spices and go more onto the vegetarian. So, for instance, the thyroid type, they have sweet cravings. That's their most classic response. It's just craves sugar and dessert and sweets. And the pituitary, they usually crave creamy. They crave yogurts and cheesecakes and that sort of stuff. And the other ones, the adrenal, their cravings typically are savory, like meats and steak and
potato chips.
No, that's a carbo.
Oh, okay.
That's a thyroid. And so we're not all pure, right? That, I mean, there's always a mix, and there's a borderline this and a pure that. But anyway, so we can deal with that. And the metabolic typing analysis includes this. So I'm able to tell you, oh, yeah, you're thyroid dominant. So if you want to lose weight, you need to start eating more protein and less carb.
Right.
Yeah, it's easy. When I know which type you are, I can pretty much tell you what to do.
Right, right. And then it's just a matter of substituting certain types of food for other ones, and you're no longer fighting your body type.
Absolutely. That's the most wonderful thing. Like, there indeed are people who should be on the grapefruit diet. And I can tell you with high level of certainty that, yes, you are the one who should be on the grapefruit diet.
Or not.
I should be telling you, oh, you are the type that the only way you're going to be normal is if you eat high quantities of steak. Which some people find it really offensive.
Right.
So if you happen to be the high protein, high purine type, and you want to be a raw vegan, it can be done, but it's more difficult because you need to eat vegetarian high protein and high fat. So that type, for instance, can have a spirulina, spinach, superfood smoothie, but it needs to include a huge dollop of coconut oil.
Right.
Like, yes, you can have spirulina or chlorella, but you'd need to balance it with a high amount of fat if you are the, you know, that type.
That type. So it sounds to me, Martin, like we've kind of cracked one of the codes for why people struggle with certain things that they struggle when it comes to their health and to their weight, which, of course, there's an obesity epidemic ongoing throughout North America and I suspect Europe. And it comes down to really knowledge about ourselves.
Yeah, it's the epidemic of ignorance. And here's the sad thing. This information is hiding in the plain sight. This has been available. The seminal book or the most important book about this was published in 1987. So it's not like it's old news. It's not news. It's old info. And even that is standing, for instance, on information published by William Donald Kelly, who cured himself of pancreatic cancer. The same cancer that killed what's his name from Apple? Not Wozniak,
Steve,
the other one.
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs. The other Steve, yes. So, for instance, if Steve Jobs had read the book by William Donald Kelly, which explained the metabolic types, and Kelly actually developed a very complex system. He had 90 body types, 90 different diets that he had created.
Wow.
The fellow that Kelly hired to organize the stuff and work the education system, his name is William Wolcott. William, bright man, he reduced it from 90 down to 9 types. And in further, he was able to reduce it only to 3 major diet groups. So it's quite workable now.
Right.
So sad for Steve Jobs to have gone the route he took. He could have lived a long, fruitful life had he taken the road not commonly taken. But because he was so technologically oriented, he was trusting solutions that are technological rather than intuitive and artsy. Perhaps.
Possibly.
I can't guess that. Cannot second guess that. But I wish that, for humanity's sake, that he had connected with it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to know more about metabolic typing and maybe what metabolic type they are, what should they do?
www.life-enthusiast.com. We have this item in the best sellers, right on the homepage. Look up advanced metabolic typing test. I think currently it stands as number 5 of our most popular items. And if that's not clear enough, give us a call at 1-866-543-3388. We'll be able to explain and guide and fill the gaps. And it's not complex. It takes half an hour to do online, and then you'll get the results. And the results include lots and lots of information about food, about how to buy food, about which foods is best, which foods to avoid. We have a special list for each person that shows the green, the red, and the black. You eat the green, you dabble with the black, and you avoid the red. Hmm. Our list. And you also get the plate, which says your plate should be 60% carbs and 25 and 15 proteins and fats. Or it's going to be the other way around. You'll get 40% protein, 20% fat, and 40% carb, or something like that. It's going to be your plate, not somebody else's.
Great. Wonderful. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. You've been listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network. And we look forward to having you with us next time. Till then, we're restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Literally.
Literally. Bye-bye.
Thank you.